meeting of the governance committee to order. And note that the first item is the approval of the agenda. The motion on approving the agenda.
So moved.
Second. Is there any discussion of the agenda? If not, the vote will occur on the motion, all in favor of vote aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it. The next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes of June and July 26. Second. Second. Is there any discussion in the suggested amendments to the minutes? There are none that will occur on approval of the minutes, all in favor of vote aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Next item on the agenda is an information item.
We don't have a formal succession planning process, and one of the at WMATA, and one of the important roles of a board is to plan for inevitable succession, not only of the general manager but of senior managers, members of the leadership team. And I wanted to raise this today with the thought that over the next couple of months we will come forward with some recommendations for a formal succession process at WMATA. Most organizations these days that are engaged in best governance practices have a formal process in place for consideration of succession for senior managers, and we ought to, in my view. And I wanted to raise a debate for any discussion, any comments, thoughts the members of the committee might have, and then we would begin the process over the next couple of months and develop a policy. Mr. Downs.
I'm enthusiastic about a succession planning process. I would like to offer a note of context. The authority did have, probably by some outside evaluations, the best succession planning process in the transit industry. About 4 or 5 years worth of effort in identifying a cadre of mid-level managers, training them, assigning mentors to them, providing extra opportunities, and rotational assignments for work throughout the authority to get different perspectives on the authority. The process died instantly when large-scale management layoffs started. Apparently, the succession planning process was not considered as part of the layoffs, and then they laid off the personnel who were managing the succession planning process and eliminated the budget. But the reason I mention it is it is not enough in the authority to plan for and think about and execute a succession planning process. It is imperative to think about how to institutionalize it so that it doesn't die again. The worst thing that happens for the staff at an authority like this is to go through an exercise like the one that the authority went through a decade ago and then overnight practically abandon it. It was cynicism and mistrust among the management staff. I think it was a tragedy the authority abandoned that management development and training process and succession planning process. But I think we have to make it clear, I believe, that if we encourage the general manager to pursue this, that it is a board mandate and it is a board expectation that this survives long-term as an investment in our management infrastructure, the same way we're making commitments about long-term infrastructure improvement. We can't repeat this tragedy again.
I agree with both of you. We should be doing this and we should be protecting it. I just want to be sure it is not inconsistent with our delegation that the general manager has full control over who hires and how he manages them.
I just wanted to add the comment that I think that the fact that this is in the governance committee, that this is where the oversight has to be along with the board's role, so that it is our responsibility to monitor it, to make sure that it is in place and working collaboratively with our general manager, CEO.
Mr. Dyke.
Even though I'm not a member of the committee, I just want to commend the chair for raising this issue and putting it out there, because I think it is absolutely the right thing from governance perspective and consistent with what Moore said about doing it, being the right of the general manager to make these decisions. So I commend the committee and urge you to move as quickly as you can on it. Keep in mind past history as we go forward.
Well, maybe we don't need to reinvent the wheel. I wasn't aware. As a relatively new member of the board, I wasn't aware of this history, Tom, that you mentioned, and it may well be that we could resuscitate some or all of the processes that were in place previously. But we'll be taking a look at this over, as I said, over the next couple of months. We're not going to try to take any action on this today. This is simply to have a discussion and see what the thinking of members were and any recommendations. And maybe we've had the most important recommendation, and that is to go back to what we've done in the past and see what we can learn from that, both positive and negative, about the way it was handled.
I think it's important because it's still alive in the minds of some of the managers, but the investment and the commitments that the authority made, it's important for the board to know what they were and how it worked.
Any other comments on this item? If not, move to some action items that we have today. The first item is something the committee's been dealing with for some time, and members are familiar with it. That's the approval of the general counsel reporting relationship. There's a new document which has been developed, which everyone should have had an opportunity to review, and I would open the committee to a motion or any discussion you may have. Everybody comfortable with the latest draft that incorporates the items that we had reviewed previously and suggested be incorporated?
Mr. Chairman.
Mrs. Hahn.
As some of you know, this is one where I do have some discomfort about where we're going. Coming from a different system where, in fact, the council does report directly to the board and serves at the will of the board, I do understand the complexity of what is before us. So what is of greatest importance to me are numbers 1 and 3 in the resolved, which says that the GM CEO is responsible for appointing and removing the council subject to the concurrence of the board of directors, and establishing performance goals for and assessing the performance of the general counsel with appropriate consultation with the board. Appropriate consultation is an undefined term, and we do have a good working relationship with our GM, and I assume that that means we will have the opportunity to weigh in. But I want to put it on the record. This does give me pause. And it may mean on occasion that the board needs to seek other legal advice, because, in fact, the council will be under the GM's control. And while I don't think we have anything to worry about at the moment, and I want to say that repeatedly, there is a check and balance issue here that I think we have to be aware of as we make this change from what has been the case, I understand, for a number of years, but not for forever. It was changed relatively recently, the arrangement. So having said my piece, I would move the adoption as I am a member of the committee. But I do hope that the museum will come back to us with what the plan is for appropriate consultation, that we are all very clear about what that means.
Is there a second on the motion?
Yeah, as a member of the committee, I would second. I would also note my experience in several public authorities that I've worked in over my life. It has always been the dotted line relationship that the general counsel has, and it's worked in both agencies.
Is there further discussion of the motion? Ms. Bowser?
Thank you, Ms. Barnes. Is this one of the recommendations, and I apologize for walking in as the discussion was beginning, that was at the governance report, or is this evolve, what necessitated this action now?
I don't believe this was a recommendation that emerged from any report.
Okay. I don't have a problem with it. I will be supporting it. I was just wondering if we were moving up for another of the recommendations. Thank you.
Any further discussion? If not, the vote will occur on the motion. All in favor, vote aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. The ayes have it, and
the
motion
board
is adopted.
It goes to the full board in October, right?
That's correct.
The process.
That's correct. This is to recommend this to the full board. And the next item is similar, and that is approval of the job description of the board secretary. Again, we've had an opportunity to look at this document.
Mr. Chairman, would you like a motion to approve it?
A motion would be in order.
I would so move.
Is there a second? Is there discussion of recommending again to the full board the adoption of the job description for the board secretary? Hearing none, the vote will occur on the motion. All in favor will vote aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. And now we come to a somewhat more complex question, and that is approval of the strategic framework that, again, we've all had an opportunity to review and comment on, and now we're here to consider it today. Perhaps a good way to start would be to put a motion on the table and then have discussion if members of the committee are so inclined. Is there a second? Now we're ready for the discussion. And who's going to lead this off? Neil, are you you going to lead us off? That was my understanding. Mr. Peterson, thank you for being back with us today.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. Nice to be here again. Can you hear me okay? Great. So where we are today, if you recall the last meeting we had, there was quite a bit of discussion between the draft that the board had done over the last 12 months and then the draft that had come out from the ELB and the interplay between them. And this document here that you see in front of you represents the output of that discussion. And at least from a third-party observer, it seems to me that most of all of the comments that the board made at the last meeting have been incorporated in here. The four goals, for example, are much more lively and stronger and much more reflective of the goals that the board had as a result of their efforts over the last several months. The mission statement is pretty much the same. It's what does Metro do? And then the vision statement has been changed to be where you want to go, aspirational. And so I guess the issue really is, number one, you want to reflect on the amount of time and effort you put into this. It's been, I think, 14 months now since you started this effort. And as discussed before, Mort and Tom can back this up, but it's very unusual for a board, and Rich, very unusual for a board in the transit industry who have done, to made the effort you've made to put this kind of a document together, which will provide the framework for the staff to be able to come back with multi-year business plans and budgets and a plan on how they're going to achieve these goals. So number one, you ought to reflect on the effort you've put into it so far. And then number two, it seems to me that you need to reflect on whether or not these changes as a result of the last meeting incorporate what you want. And then number three, in terms of process, this still isn't the final step. This, if you decide to approve this today, my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, Rich and Barbara, but it'll then go out to the public once again for more comment, and then they'll come back in December for final okay. And then the final point is, even with that, it's a living document. And a year from now, you may just modify it and change it, and it'll keep being a continual process. So I guess the question on the table is, does this reflect the discussion you had last time specifically, and are there any modifications to this that you want time, or are you comfortable with it?
After silence, I'll speak. we have before us, as we've indicated, I think a reflection, and between the meeting we last had and now, I think the refinement has allowed us to reach, I think, this point. And I think the more critical point here that we are reflecting is, it does not have to be perfect, but does it really meet what we want to do and see in the future? And give us the template by which we can work over the next, the ongoing months. And as a member, I think that the work that's been done and what this document right now reflects is a good point for us at this stage. And I would hope that we could move forward and to the point that we are out in the community gathering the feedback on what we've all agreed upon from our stakeholders for adoption in January, and that gives us, I think, the marching orders that we have in terms of how we're going to govern ourselves over the next 12 months in the operation of the agency and working collaboratively with the general manager and the board, and us get really measurements that we can reflect on with the goals that are set forth. So I that is my comment on what I see before us.
Mm-hmm. Others? More?
Yeah, I think the discussion and the work we've put into this, it now strikes me as something that really is strategic. We're going to squeeze out everything that may be of lesser importance. If we could do those four, meet those four strategic goals, we would have a really good organization, we'd have a really good potential of achieving the mission. I think as we go out and discuss it, we don't always try to keep it at that strategic level and not get it down to day-to-day stuff. I think it's in the right place now to begin the discussion.
Alvin.
My silence means work, so I won't. So I'll be disciplined and just the one point to echo what Kathy shared. We're not striving for perfection. We're striving for clarity, consistency, and not only internally but externally gaining consensus around a specific set of a framework. And that's, I'm happy with where we are, and I'm ready to move on.
Yes, sir.
Just a point of clarification. When we talk about improved regional mobility, are we talking about the region as defined by the compact, or are we talking about the region defined by other federal and census?
Can I give you my answer?
Well, I just don't know the answer.
I think the answer today is as defined by the compact, but one of the things we've got on the agenda, if we have time today, what are the strategic issues that you all want to put on your work plan over the next several months? And that would clearly be one. So yeah, I think there's a difference between today and where you want to go in the future. Does that answer the question?
No.
Okay.
Sorry. I mean, the compact, I understand geographically. Yeah, 10, 5 census from now, the region's going to look a lot different than it looks right now. And governed by the metro compact. So we're not constrained? Is that, would that answer to just talk about the compact geographic boundaries?
I think really the answer to that is where the board wants to go.
Okay.
And the region wants to go.
All right. Okay.
Mary.
I think this is, I think you listened to us very well and took our thinking and put it into something that's very straightforward, easy for people to understand. I really like the verbs in the goals: build and maintain, meet or exceed, improve, ensure. I think those are really, they're words that imply movement and positive change, and I think that's a really good thing for us to be taking out there. To Mort's comment, you know, there are lots of people in the world who can't learn a strategic framework, but they will take these things and they'll say, so when you say this, do you mean I want this to be different? And we should pay attention to those statements, even though they feel like they're down in the weeds, because they'll give us clues about how the public would define success, and so might help us as we think about the things that come underneath of these that are really mostly staff's job, those tactics and strategic actions that have to happen. But no, I think this is something we can all be pretty proud of, and hopefully it will engender the right conversations in the region.
Emil, I think we have a motion on the table, and maybe if there isn't further discussion, call for a vote on the motion. All in favor will vote aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. I think it's unanimous.
Yep. Barbara. Oh, sorry.
We're going to move to the next stage of our discussion this afternoon.
Okay. Next slide. So, Metro will really move this on the path, and we're still moving on that path to improving service and rebuilding the system and rebuilding safety. But momentum is going to really move us to the next generation of Metro. And that's what we're talking about, developing a momentum to get people and to get the region to think with us and to talk with us about what could be our future. Next slide. So if I could just talk briefly just for a second about the goals of the outreach plan. The major design of this is really to first continue to build the credibility and really to talk about the progress where we've come. We're just starting from the beginning. Over the last 2.5 years, a lot of work has been done. Metro Forward projects are being completed. We have a foundation, if you will, that we're building from. It's also meant to be informative because, as I've talked for the last 14 months, facts have come out about the central role that region plays in the Metro plays region with respect to the economy, with livability, the environment. So it also is meant to be educational and informative. And we really want to present a case for the need not just to be into today, but to plan for Metro's future. It's just not enough to fix the system. And the program is designed not to be just one way and to be educational, but to be two-way, to get a conversation going with lots and lots and lots of different partners, to be interactive. And at the end of it, if I think about it in terms of communication, kind of basic one-on-one where you build awareness and then you move people along on the chain, it's about moving folks from Metro to it being about my Metro to our Metro. Because it really is about everybody being a participant in trying to figure out the future and where we ultimately want to go. And we know that at the end, this is going to be about big actions that we'll have to take. And of course, it goes without saying almost that there would be funding involved, and we really want to create a sense of community about it and support both of those for Metro. Next slide. So the strategies that we're going to use to reach people, how we engage in this conversation, and we're going to use a number of channels. We want to talk to our own employees. They are ambassadors. They talk to people all the time in their homes, communities, at the stations. We want to talk with employers in the region. We want to work with the businesses or the Board of Trade, which we have had an ongoing conversation and dialogue with them. We also want to reach out to our customers directly. We, in Metro Forward, we've learned a lot of lessons about how to talk to our customers. Certainly, we have a pretty robust digital program, and we want to step beyond that, and we have some plans that would do that. Next slide. And we want to work with our partners, because staff and management can only do so much, but we can really extend our reach with talking and working with advocacy groups, smart group, growth groups, environmentals, those groups that are our natural alliances. And also if talking to and using and asking for forums before the Riders Advisory Council or the accessibility group, but the Riders Advisory Council looks forward to hosting where they would ask customers to come in and give us comments. So asking others to help us reach people is also a big part of the overall communication strategy. So just as Metro serves and just as so many people feel like they have a connection to Metro, it just seems like the audience and the people that we're trying to reach would be almost endless. It's almost like everyone who lives in the street, practically, whether it's major employers or citizens or and certainly elected officials who have given us such strong support, many of you in from your own jurisdictions on the funding side. But we also want to do a couple of other things that would reach non-traditional organizations that may not have spoken up in the past or we have may not been that effective at reading before. And, of course, getting it out into the general population with regular media and using tools, as I mentioned, social media, too, for those that are digitally inclined. Next slide. So we've listened very hard to the conversations that have happened around this table over the last, as Neil talked about, the last 14 months. And with that, I would like to share with you our story. Oh. There we go.
The Washington Metropolitan Area Center, I want to welcome you to this historic groundbreaking.
March 29, 1976, Metro's first weekday of service. Open from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m., the new rail system carried just 19,000 customers between five stations along 4 miles of track. Today, the system has expanded to more than 100 miles of track with 86 stations, carrying nearly 750,000 riders on the rails every weekday. And soon, Metro's newest expansion, the Silver Line Dulles Rail Extension, will open and bring with it thousands more riders. From the rails to the roads, Metro Bus moves another 400,000 customers across the D.C. region every workday. It's a figure expected to grow along with the region itself.
We go private for today, but we're going to see a lot more congestion on roads.
Stations in once considered outlying suburbs have transformed surrounding communities into bustling urban centers. And in the district, stations and bus hubs have brought revitalization and renewal to countless inner city events. In fact, land surrounding Metro stations is responsible for some 2 million jobs, including employees of 207 federal agencies. Metro is committed to moving the region forward. We're well into our 6-year Metro rebuilding effort, investing some $5 billion in the system to improve safety, buy new equipment, and replace things like elevators and escalators.
So we have launched the Metro Forward campaign, which is really about rebuilding the existing system to get it back to where it should be. Well, that's fine, but that's just taking us back to where it should be, and where it was, you know, several years ago, maybe a decade ago. But then you have to look going forward.
And as we rebuild, it's time for Metro and our customers to look even further into the future. When the rush hour platforms are full, peak time buses are often standing room only, and the core of the system through downtown Washington is approaching capacity. Yet, more growth is coming to the D.C. region.
We really have to start planning now in terms of how we're going to accommodate these folks on the Metro system.
Over the next 3 decades, the region is expected to experience a 30% population growth and a 40% increase in employment. All of it translates into more demand and a system that's already strained.
Only a two-track system. There is no other capacity. And when you build a track system at the cost of, say, $12 billion, you can't easily go in and put a lane in like you can on a highway.
That growth will come as Metro faces financial challenges. Costs to maintain and upgrade the system keep rising, and after years of underperforming stock earnings, Metro's retirement programs are becoming increasingly unaffordable. Pension costs are skyrocketing from $18 million in 2006 to $159 million by 2015. That's why planning for Metro's future is critical today, both in terms of how the system should physically evolve and how to pay for it. It's essential that we anticipate future needs and solidify priorities to ensure the region remains not only rural, but also accessible through public transit.
It's essential for the vitality of the region to sustain itself as it is right now, and also to position it for growth.
Metro's board of directors and management are charting a new course with a strategic plan. And to help that plan, we are turning to our stakeholders for support. That means Metro wants to hear from you, our customers, our neighbors, local business owners. Your voice is key.
Well, I think our public is our real partners. They're the ones that experience this every day and see plan forward. We need to hear what they see their needs are and how our system can serve them best.
The first step to ensure the system's stability is to squeeze all available capacity from the current core system. That may mean more 8-car trains in the AM and PM rush or priority bus lanes. It means making improvements at key transfer stations to elevators, escalators, and platforms. Other solutions could include construction of pedestrian tunnels or integrating service from other regional transit systems.
People can talk about extensions, they can talk about new stations on the rest. But that all feeds into the core. All those trains, no matter where you're standing, goes through the core. And as people who ride the system today know, that core is crowded.
Still, the answer to Metro's long-term sustainability reaches beyond the system's core. That's why we're posing a half dozen questions to our customers. We're asking you to weigh in on the following. Which priorities support business growth? Which investment ever improves service to more customers? How do we strengthen the core to enable future expansion? Which communities are most in need of enhanced Metro connectivity? How will adequate funding be identified to sustain and grow the system? And when will reliable funding for Metro become a regional priority? As always, the momentum to rebuild, sustain, and grow Metro to support the real push the support and input from all stakeholders. Join us in defining the next generation of Metro. Our future is winning.
So now, with the mission, the vision, and the goals, we really do have a framework to begin to have this conversation. And we're planning not only to talk about the story as you saw it there, but we're actually going to ask people about the goals, and we're going to put actions against the goals, some of which you've seen in the framework, the draft framework that we've provided to you before. But in addition to that, we're also going to paint a picture, because sometimes it's not enough to just to talk about goals and the actions, and this actually relates more specifically to that third goal of improving regional mobility and connect communities. Because we are transportation and we move people every day, it's important to talk with folks about what could Metro look like. Like what would be the possibilities 40 years from now? And so we're going to actually ask them about some things that some of you have talked about before, that have been in the press before, that have been in the planning discussions previously. And Tom Harrington, who's the director of long-range planning, is going to just give you a sample of some of the things that we are going to float out and ask people for comment.
So what could the regional transit system be in the future? What's needed to achieve that vision? What are the elements that will make up that generation? At the April Governance Committee, we reviewed work that the Metro planners and our jurisdictional partners have been undertaking to develop that regional transit vision. Today, we're not here to present a final plan, a final action plan. Really, to lay out the menu of options. And as the video said, it's really time to hear from our stakeholders about future direction. But first, In order to achieve the goal of improving mobility, we need to focus attention on increasing the capacity in the center of the system and the core. We've certainly talked through a lot of these issues at previous meetings. This is the area that's our space in crowded conditions. It's the key to the success of the region's transit system. As you know, most systems constrained at those points where lines come together. And we've already reached the limit in terms of the number of trains that we can push across the rivers into downtown Washington. Roslyn and L'Enfant Plaza in particular are those portals where we typically feel that crunch. But there are steps we can take to increase capacity. First, we'll need to operate all 8-car trains in the rush periods. The Metrorail platforms were built to handle 8-car trains. We're not currently there, just running them as all 8-car in the rush hour. But we need to invest not just in more rail cars, but in the power upgrades and in the maintenance facilities to achieve the design capability of the system. In addition to longer trains, we'll need to invest in station improvements. Make it easier for cars to move through the system. We'll need to add more stairs, escalators, elevators, expand mezzanines, and improve circulation at particularly key transfer stations and the stations in the core, such as Union Station, Gallery Place, Metro Center, and L'Enfant Plaza. Also in the downtown core, there are opportunities for new underground pedestrian links. Right now, we have a virtual tunnel between Farragut and Farragut West that allows people to travel without being charged an extra fare. But we need to go to a real tunnel underground. And not only that, also we've looked at one between Metro Center and Gallery Place. And why do we want that? Well, we think these links will help reduce transfer pressure on those most crowded platforms where transfers take place, such as at Metro Center, saves riders time, and would reduce the crowding conditions. One strategy we've looked at in depth to increase capacity is to build new rail connections between our current lines that would allow trains to travel in different patterns. For example, a new connection from the Atlantic Courthouse to the Blue Line at Arlington Cemetery would allow trains to stay within Virginia without passing into downtown Washington and without going through the crowded Roslyn choke point, providing more direct service between the Orange Line and the Pentagon Airport. And if as shown in the diagram there, if an additional connection were built, some Orange Line trains could travel to the east side of downtown, thereby providing more one-seat rides and basically utilizing all of our entry points into downtown more efficiently. But ultimately, if we want to add more significant capacity to the core, we need to consider new rail lines. Our system basically has three tunnels through the core. So we've got the red line, we've got the green, we've got the orange blue. Looking at a fourth tunnel or potentially a fifth connecting in would significantly increase the capacity and reliability of the system. As kind of indicated here, we're looking at options to separate the yellow and the green lines, the blue and the orange silver, as ways to add more capacity. Okay, next. And while the Metrorail system was designed to serve the traditional commute from the suburbs into downtown core, the dispersal and growth of population jobs at activity centers around the region has continued. It's meant more trip making between these suburban activity centers. The region's transit system needs to evolve to be able to serve all these new and growing transit markets better. Metrorail and Metrobus will continue to be that backbone of this regional transit network, but it's a complex system today. It will only become more so as we add new modes to basically what the menu of transit services in the region. Many transit modes, many operators, they all need to work together. Speaking of Metrobus, the Metrobus system continues to serve a significant portion of our needs, but as we've talked about before, traffic congestion is taking a serious toll in terms of the efficiency of the system and the reliability of it. The region needs to fully implement the Metrobus Priority Corridor Network Plan. This means improving and adding service on our most heavily used corridors, and it also means giving buses priority on our congested roadways, as indicated in the graphic there of what a K Street transitway would look like. But really, all day, only bus lanes would have a tremendous impact on the reliability of the bus system. But we're also looking at, say, lower cost or less impact priority as well. In some places, it may be signal priority. It may be a few jumps where buses get around traffic jams. Now, right, Metro is working with DDOT on looking at the potential in a few downtown corridors, such as H and I Street Northwest, places where you have very high numbers of buses per hour moving through the core. We need to look at connecting communities with high-quality transit. And in particular, there are a number of plans going on right now to look at bus rapid transit and light rail transit. The Purple Line, DC and Columbia Pike streetcar plans, the Crystal City Potomac Yard Transitway, to name a few. These plans are being developed locally. Metro can help lead the region to explore new regional connections for these, and ultimately, strategy to link these lines together and make them interoperable will actually allow the region to achieve the greatest gain from all these local investments. So a regional network could include new connections, and in particular, we're looking at places where lines can cross, local boundaries, and again, particularly river crossings and connecting the system is what we're looking at, both in the core, but also we've looked at crossing the Leeson Bridge, the Wilson Bridge, places where there are key regional connections needed. But it's not just building lines. It really, in order to ensure the seamless connections for riders, we need to look at technology and the information that's used and fares. All these need to be integrated in a way that will allow customers to travel across the region. And again, Metro is often that first place people go to get trip-making information. And so in that sense, we need to serve the regional travel market, regardless of which mode or operator people are traveling on. A Purple Line rider will want real-time information on bus arrivals at Silver Spring. A Silver Line rider getting on at Reston will want to know how to transfer to DC streetcar. And there'll be examples like that as we look ahead to the future. Finally, with the region growing, we'll need more ways to extend the reach of the metro system. And this could include extensions beyond the current end of line. But it doesn't necessarily mean rail extensions. We're looking at bus rapid transit and light rail extensions in some place. An expansion of MARC and VRE commuter rail will be critical to serving long distance markets too. But again, how do they interface with Metro is one of the things we're looking at. And, there are lots of plans on the table. We're looking at corridors such as the Orange Line to Gainesville, Orange to Bowie, on in south towards Potomac Mills, and the Green Line to Laura. And all those have been analyzed, and we're going to continue to explore. So again, this was our menu. I think now the question to all of our stakeholders is, what do you think the priorities are, and are we on the right track?
Thanks, Tom. And I want to also introduce our new managing director of planning, who has arrived just in time for this big effort. So Sean Cannon is way. So we're glad to have him join us, and more on the force is welcome. So that's the message. Now the tools. So how are we going to people, and how are we going to get this conversation going? So today the video will go live, but also there are many other things planning to do. And Andrea Burnside, who has been working a lot on the strategic planning process, is going to walk through the website pages that have been developed just especially for Momentum that she and her team have developed.
Okay, thank you, Barbara. And before I start, I will say that if you take your smartphone and try to go there right now, this is a test site. It's going to go live this afternoon. So we're looking at a test site right now. It's not up there yet. But I get to be your tour guide for our new Momentum Interactive website. And this lays out our strategic plan using words, pictures, videos, video clips, board member quotes, links to greater detail about WMATA programs and projects. And then we also link out a variety of other agencies' planning information and websites. So the nice thing about having an interactive website is it's a place where everything strategic can come together in one place to communicate the story. And the other benefit of a website is it's flexible and changeable, so we can add new things as the situation changes and information becomes available. You've all seen the printed guide. I think you have a copy there in your folders. And so as I go through this quickly, you'll see that this kind of follows the story in the guide, and you'll kind of recognize the storyline. So getting to it, there's a couple different ways to get to it. Once it's up, you're familiar with the rotating carousel on WMATA's homepage. So it'll be the Momentum logo that you can click on the rotating carousel. And under About Metro, the third section down, it'll say strategic plan. You can click on that, and that'll take you into the link page for the strategic plan. So we are on the landing page here, and you can see it starts out with a quote from our chair, Mrs. Hudgens, about governance reform, the board's policy focus, and its leadership in creating the strategic plan. that kind of leads into a question about our past as America's subway system, how we're rebuilding the foundation today, and how we're critical to the economic vitality of the region. And there you can click on the Case for Transit Technical Reports, which came out at the end of November 2011. And it's not going to go there. It's a big report? Okay. It's loading. Okay. Hopefully every click we do is a hit us on, and I'll be here for an hour. No? Okay. There you go. Just an example that these are things that are out there, and you can click on it. Okay. The next section goes into Metro's path forward, and that's really the details about our strategic framework, the mission, vision, and goals that you all endorsed today in your action. And folks can click on a PDF of the guide, which is the Momenti, if they want to print it out and use it as a handout. And also see that there is, you can click on the video that you just saw, so that's accessible to folks on the homepage of the strategic plan site. We have each of the four goals listed, and each has its own detailed page or pages. And I'm not going to walk you through all of them, but in just a moment I'll show you a couple of them and how you can kind of go into detail on each of them. The strategic challenges page here on the homepage features our challenges and opportunities. Says that the way our system is designed today, which makes it challenging to meet the needs of the future. We just heard from Tom about that. And the unprecedented growth expecting over the next couple of decades. And then finally, that leads into a section near the bottom called Join the Conversation. And that highlights what we've heard so far from our stakeholders. You all spent a lot of time earlier this year talking to stakeholders and heard some important messages. So this highlights that and begins to pose some of the questions that we're going to be asking stakeholders that Barbara mentioned, and like things like what priorities support business growth in the region and what investments to improve service to our customers. There's multiple places throughout this website that people can join the conversation. It has kind of that green button, join the conversation, and Barbara's going to show you what that leads to in a second when I finish here. But, as I mentioned, let's take a look at a couple of the goal pages. We'd like to look at meet or exceed customer expectations by consistent delivering quality service. So it has its own page. Each of the goal pages is laid out in a similar way, again, similar to the guide that you've seen, starting with a description of the goal, what it means, and then listing some examples of actions that we're taking for customers and employees to achieve the goal. As an example, you can learn about the Better Bus program underway and go to that. You can learn more about the 7,000 series rail cars. There's information about that. And then there's a link to our accessibility page for folks to learn about accessibility. And then other quality improvements like Metro Forward. And then Rush Plus. So again, that's a really nice way to be able to connect people to a lot of information that's already out there. So if you move over to the right, a very vibrant green color there, we highlight basically what we call the foundation, and that's kind of where we're starting from, what we've been able to accomplish. We have a link to our scorecard there. It's been up for a year or so now, and then there's also to a video that we don't need to go into, but at the bottom of each page, there's navigation links to help people move the course. Okay, and then if you could go to the next goal page, which is improve regional mobility and connect communities. Under the actions, the lead us there. This is an example of connecting to others' websites, so click on the Dulles. People can access information about where the Dulles Metro Rail is on track. And you can find out about other regional transit plans, whether it's our own Planet Metro blog. Is that going there? Oh, wrong one. That's okay. Anyway, this is Region Forward. We have the long-range transportation plan for the capital region. Sorry, went too fast. And then the planetary log. Okay, and then there's kind of one, this is really interactive. We linked up to APTA's website, and they have a fuel savings calculator, so you can figure out how much you'll save in fuel by taking transit. And then they also have a general APTA transit savings report. Okay. And then on to the right there under the foundational area, we have Metro's Joint Development Program. So you can find out more about that. So anyway, and then finally, if you could go to the very last page, which is turning the strategic plan into reality. So it's fine to have a big strategic plan, but what are you actually going to do to implement this plan and to realize it? So you can see that the strategic plan, the business plans, multi-year budgeting, and then measuring us as to whether we're making progress against that. So now, I mentioned a couple of times about joining the conversation, but I'm going to show you how people can join the conversation.
Okay, so I want to thank you for piloting this concept. When you were discussing amongst yourselves goals, you were piloting, I think so, hello? You were piloting the Mind Mixer tool. So this is an online conversation that people can engage in, and what we plan to do with this is we plan to post a series of questions every few weeks. One of the great things about this is it allows people to engage when they want to engage and not necessarily when it's going to be off. So if they're at home or they're on the train or they want to go online, they can do that. And they'll be able to, as you can see, if you click on one of those, which is sort of links up to one of the goals, there'll be a whole series of, there'll be an intro where we talk about a little bit, but a whole series of things that they can choose from to prioritize. And literally, we will run polls on here. We'll ask people to pick their favorite or top priority or make comments, and then they get to vote. So Mind Mixer sort of takes kind of a town hall, if you will, online. So we're planning to use that. And then to tell people about Mind Mixer and to also tell them about, you know, the latest developments in the whole planning program, we're going to use some of our own tools through news releases, social media. We now have 33 followers on Twitter. We have a community relations list of about 1,300 that are in the region, different organizations, and we also have a stakeholders list of public officials that's pretty robust as well. Some of the other tools that we plan to use are, we call them momentum forums, and this is another two-way tool. So instead of a focus group, if you will, where folks just come in and have comments, that's productive in itself, but we're going to take it to another level where people will actually be given handheld machines to actually vote on things. And this tool was actually used very successfully. We provided you with a report that the Transportation Planning Board, I think Mr. Downey had asked us for a report on that. That's how they did that. That was just through this deliberative process. We plan to have at least three of them, one in each jurisdiction. We will invite community leaders as well as customers, and we're going to make sure that we have a good mix of bus and rail customers. And we will have sessions on strategic questions. Some of these projects that we talked about, our general message, the goals, we're going to be asking for a lot of comments for them to come in and help us. So that's something new that we're going to do. You have the framework guide also. Rich has started town hall meetings. We just had one last week with our employees. We're planning to do yet another one this fall. Presentations, we've already got out presentations and kind of test driving the message. We'll have an online survey, and we also want to do, you know, just something very simple with paper surveys of some sort to get right into the hands of customers. So some of our tools, and also I would like to add that we will be providing you all with the toolkit, including the video, DVD, as well as some talking points, too. So you will have your toolkit as well. These are, this is just some samples of some of the things that we're doing. This isn't a full built-out calendar, but as I mentioned, we have in touch with the Board of Trade, along with Director Bellamy. Richard was speaking at Board of Trade's Regional Transportation Policy Group, so many of these topics came up. He's also spoke to the D.C. Building Industry Association. We've had another, we started meet and greets back up. He was in Metro Center last week. In October, going to Northern Virginia Transportation Commission, Northern Virginia Transportation Alliance, and the Arlington County Board. We're going to have a joint planning session there. Regina's also working on scheduling similar sessions in Maryland in the district. We're also going to reach out to some of our ally groups that I've mentioned too. And also in October and November, Carol Kissel, she does, either October or November, Carol Kissel meets routinely with the CAOs and the CFOs, and so there will be conversation at that level as well. November, I mentioned the RAC, after we get also the Accessibility Committee, after we get beyond the election, we're envisioning a Metro delegating to bring them along, to get back to them, because we were out there talking to them, you were all talking to them previously. In the whole time, we get more mind mixer questions up and more content out there. We think our survey work will be done in November as well as our forums. And then I'm sure that there'll be more in December because there's a lot to get done in a short amount of time. So I want to thank you for your patience, and that is our outreach program.
Neil, are we still working up the premise that the Region Forward report says that we're going to grow, the region's going to grow is just Philadelphia?
Houston.
Is it Houston? I thought it was Philadelphia. Oh, wow, I thought Houston is what, the third largest metropolitan area in the country? What is Washington Metro? Fifth or sixth? Okay, well, anyway, if it's Houston, we have a problem.
Houston, we have a problem.
Yeah. Well, I think you better work that into the conversation, because I don't know how we're going to handle it.
The district's representative, not Virginia's, who made that.
We have a problem. Okay, you can borrow that one. You can take that one. Because I think if the citizens of the metropolitan area think that we're going to be able to handle that, this is a real challenge. So.
Actually, first off, thank you. Very comprehensive presentation. And my question or observation is actually somewhat similar to Tom's, but not quite. We present a lot of data, a lot of good data as it relates to describing the problem that we have and that we need to solve. It's clear, certainly, that a lot of disparate organizations that are aware of these facts already in terms of the region and transit and what's happening throughout the region. And so to the extent that we are who we are, how do we use that information that we have to leverage, you know, forward movement? The one piece that feels like it's not present in our high-level information is cost and consequences. And I think that for purposes of gaining focus on this, it's very important that we present the credible case for cost, consequences, and time. A lot of things that are presented there that make a lot of sense, they're known to a lot out there, the planning community, the development community, the communities. The challenge that we always confront is that comes time to pay for these things, we don't have the resolve to make decisions, to make the investments, even when we know it must be done. And we can't make the we can make the investments, we don't have the resources to create funds, not in sufficient dollars to make it happen. And I think it's important for us to be able to crystal clear define what the capacity issues are. And frankly, if the investment doesn't occur, it grinds to a halt. We can't put more people on the trains, which means we can't bring more people into the community, which means there can be no more growth. We've got to crystallize that discussion so that it can be focused and discussed in a way that it translates into an action plan. Which choice but to limit the number of people who will get on the train, and then what will they do? How will they get here? How will they operate? So we've got to crystallize cost, and we also have to crystallize time. Because we make a decision tomorrow to do all the things there, and it's 25 years before they get done. Even if we begin planning, design, execution, environmental reviews, all of the things that are required, it will take decades to do it. In the meantime, what happens to the region and its prosperity? If, you know, we're talking about a 40-year plan, but it's not a 40-year plan, it's a 40-year path to action. We need to be able to focus and crystallize on, and I think that's, for me, that's what's missing, is sharpening the dialogue, and that's the leadership that I think can play, because we've got the experience and the information to, and the credibility to say this is where for us to meet the road. And I think that the funding stakeholders need that, because at the end of the day, they cast the votes that make the difference. And so we need to crystallize that dialogue for them. And I think that it's important that we crystallize it for those riders and others, because they will be the folks who can line up behind the funding legislators when they have to make those decisions. So that's one set of observations. The second set is on the engagement on the surveys, and I appreciate the expanse of the kinds of outreach you've done. It's much, much broader, and I really do appreciate that. One way that you might be able to reach more folks also is just people with busy lives. It's really hard to get them to take, even when they know it's important to them, it's hard to get them to the time to do it. It might, maybe with the alignment of our business communities, employers, companies, maybe we can prevail upon them to come into their homes, to come into their shops. It's hard to stop somebody when they're getting on a bus and survey them. It's hard to tell somebody to go online when they get home at night. Maybe they'll allow us to have folks in their places of employment, because it's important to them. The folks that ride the bus and the train, they have to get there. And maybe they say, okay, well, you can take an hour four times a week over the next month, or maybe we can and they will allow their employees to come to the cafeteria and spend an hour with you or take a survey. But we've got a captive audience there. It is the owners of those firms or the managers have a stake in getting the support of their employees who ride transit. It may be another way to extend the outreach to get an audience, particularly those people who may have time or access to the technology or to be able to come out to a work group or focus group. So, anyway, thank you.
Just a point. I wanted to. I enjoyed the video a lot, and as I was watching it, I was really trying to focus on who the audience would be. And it seems like it is more directed toward funders, decision makers, and other stakeholders, it seems to me. But I'm interested to hear what you have to say on that. And I was also thinking of other ways we might get it out, because for me, it helps explain to you know, my colleagues and constituents where we are with the system. What I thought, as I was thinking, is there like a prequel to this that kind of explains the current investments? I think Rich was quoted, we saw Rich speaking when he said, we're not just talking about the state of good repair, but the future. And I thought that was an excellent point. But for some people, we still have to talk to them about the state of good repair and how we're addressing the problems that they're experiencing right now for them to even be able to hear this. So that's the question. And the last thing is that I, for example, think that we could get this video out on a public station. And all of us have access to those types of public stations. Just having looked at it quickly, I don't know if it was created for the general audience, and if there's a prequel or an addendum that could explain the investments in the state of good repair.
It was really created for a really pretty wide general audience because, you know, there's been a lot of conversation, I think, at this level and then also the first-tier stakeholders. But I really think that there's a need to pull people in to the conversation, so because they are seeing that we're working on the system, and it's difficult to think beyond that. And I even, you know, I would show it even to my neighbors. So I think that we should fashion it so that it could be a jump start, if you will, for conversations. So, and your question about, but what about all the other, you know, what we've done up to this point, I guess. I think, you know, that's a good point of what we could do, because what we are also thinking is when we go out to have conversations, sort of the video is a good start, but we really, try as we may, we've tried to get away from the PowerPoint, but we really do need to start some kind of a conversation. And that might be a good point to say, let's just kind of look at where Metro Forward has been and where we are, and it's the largest rebuilding effort over the last 5 years, and here are some of the major things that we have accomplished in the investments that have been made. I think that's a really valid point to make that a part of the roadshow that we're putting together.
A couple of things. Barbara, what's your plan for Spanish language?
Yeah, we were going to do the framework also in several languages, and also we were going to have a Spanish, one of the forums is going to be Spanish, in Spanish, the Momentum Forum. And then also whenever we do the online, we always do the Spanish version. So those are a couple of things.
I would really suggest that we talk to Univision or Telemundo or one of the Spanish language newspapers and so that they have access to the same information. And I do know from conversations in our community that radio spots really get the folks in the Spanish language community to do other things. That is a primary way that people get information that we want them to participate. So, you know, people in Arlington have to share what we've learned, but I just think it's really important. We have a lot of bus riders, you know, whose first language is not English. I see this as, you know, we've talked all the way along about building credibility and building the case for more money. And the two things are absolutely linked. We've been so deeply engaged in State of Good Hair because we need to show that we can do what we say we do, and that, I don't want this taken wrong, but that we're worthy of future and more investment. That's not coming through clear enough to me, that the two parts, and I think other people have said that as well, is, you know, the fact is that we are the only big system in the country that doesn't have a dedicated regional source of revenue. And that it's not clearly here, unless I miss it. That is just, it's such an important point that we have to keep. But I think if you frame it up as, you know, this is about credibility and then creditworthiness, if you will, that helps. So I had one negative reaction to the video, and it is that the only time a dollar amount is presented is that it's about the pensions. And the only time that there's words superimposed on the screen are when it's about the pensions. And I don't want employees to walk away thinking they're the problem, but I think it's possible from that people could walk away thinking, well, this is all because those pension costs are out of control, because there is no context for those dollar amounts, and they're big if you have no context about it being a $2 billion budget. So it just gave me pause.
Okay.
But I just wanted to comment about some aspects of it. One, I think somewhere in here, as we think of the future forward, we have to think of accessibility. Somewhere we need to say how our communities must improve and integrate transit into our communities for accessibility. That's a future that we can't forego, and we're not there now. And so somewhere along the way, we have to note that. It goes along with the language piece in the communication forum, and we have a multilingual translation piece that you can do forums of multiples, and that would be extremely helpful in utilizing some sources. And that brings to the other part that I think this is an excellent presentation to go forward at this time, because the region forward is going into our jurisdiction, and we get a chance to see the larger picture, and we get a chance to see the role Metro WMATA plays as we are going to wrestle with that growth, because we really are the ones that can make the greatest amount of impact. And I guess lastly, as we said before, I call it the future is funding. I mean, there is nothing else out there. And it's our economic inequality. That if you want to continue the economic growth that we have in this region, if you want to continue the quality of life we have in this region, we have to make an investment. And the investment in Metro has been traditional return for our communities, and it has to be with us. And I don't know how does this set us up for that conversation well enough, but to me, that has to be the end product of this conversation, that's where we're trying to go.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on that, because I think those are some excellent points, as well as the ones that Mary raised. And also, Alvin, because I think we really do need to emphasize how much this is going to cost, and that we're going to have dedicated funding and build a case for that. Consequences that Alvin alluded to, there's some material in here that we received that talks about the fact that if we didn't have Metro, we'd need more beltways or X number of lanes of highway or a million more cars on the road. We need to put that in there so people understand that if you don't do this, then this is what you're going to get. And I think that puts a little more context to what we're doing, and it may be in your face, but I think that's the only way you're going to get people's attention, is that if you don't do this, you're going to have a major problem. And then you can also tie in, I think, the economic development. All these new people that are coming here, people that are potential taxpayers, economic development engines, and if we don't have room for them, they're not coming here. They're going somewhere where they're investing in the system. And to the extent we can show some examples of what some other jurisdictions are doing, this is how they're investing in the future. We need to be doing the same thing. Otherwise, somebody else is going to be eating our lunch. So I think we just need to be that straightforward and that blunt and put that out there. Otherwise, people aren't going to pay attention to you.
APTA and several other organizations have done a decade look at transit referendums, successes and failures, and about 75% of all of the referendums on transit funding around the United States have been successful, probably twice the rate of anything about referendums on highways. The successful ones shared a couple of characteristics. They were specific as what they were going to fund. They put price tags on it, and they gave time frames for doing it. I think if we're following that lesson, our list of future needs needs to have some price tags, as several folks have said. They need to have time frames about how long this process takes, because there's a second message that comes with this. If we think about what people hear when they see 2040, you know, some people say, well, I'm going to be dead before that gets here. The imperative here for action is that these things have to start now. Preliminary engineering, planning, environmental work, that in some cases can take anywhere from 5 years to a decade to accomplish, to just get started. That time frame imperative needs to be linked, I think, to the business plans
that we need decisions from the public and with the board and with the stakeholders now, because we have to start building those initial costs into those multi-year business plans. We have to start with project selection and prioritization. And the public has, we have to ask the public and the stakeholders to participate with us in that prioritization. And last, when we get to the bottom line, when we draw the line through what everybody wants, we have to be ready for a serious dialogue about how we pay for it. And so price and time, cost and time, are, I think, the most important frameworks to be dealt with here, and they lead us to a conclusion, or at least a broader public discussion that perhaps we get with this kind of unstructured 30 years worth of long-term need and growth. And I'm really disappointed. You have 33 Twitter followers. Oh, okay.
Just sitting here.
33,000. Oh, geez. So, if I could just talk a little bit about next steps, because I, yes, on what is it and how much is it going to cost. This, I think this first step is really important to begin the dialogue, because most people are not at the same place that you all are in thinking about these issues. And I think we need to get people to think about these, some of these really important issues, and get a sense of priorities, and at the same time begin to be doing the cost analysis of the priorities, so that, you know, we can come back to you with that. But I think we need to, it may seem intuitive to us and to me that you would think about Metro's future, but I don't think that that is an automatic thing. And so what I'm saying is we need to first engage people in this conversation and start talking to them and then build it, I would say. So.
I respectfully disagree with you. And I do so because I think if you know what's happening around the region, I sit today with citizens planning our future, and they can quote the numbers better than we can about how the region is going to grow. And if we don't do this, we build fear rather than optimism and confidence. Because I will tell you, we're opening next year the Silver Line, and we're planning for the second phase. And I have to calm people's future down that isn't going to work for us for the time frame, but they're smart enough to know that it's not going to work forever. And they're going to ask you that question if you show up at their door. And I agree that we don't want to be down in the weeds, but at some level, we need to say we understand this magnitude. And maybe it's closer in some jurisdictions than others, but it somewhere we don't have to say the specifics of projects and things of that nature, but what the magnitude of some of this that we're talking about.
Yeah, and if I could just follow up on that, the issue is going to have to get discussed at some point. And I'm a firm believer, if you want to determine the outcome of a debate, you set the parameters of the debate. So I think we need to get out front on this particular issue, so that if we're going to be debating that issue, we're going to be debating it on terms of jobs lost and other beltways needed and all those things, as opposed to some other people who are not so enamored with doing the things that we have to do, saying this is horrible, this is going to, well, I don't want to give specific examples because I don't want to give up anything. But the point is, you don't want somebody else determining how this debate is going to be conducted. We need to get out in front on this. So that would be my contribution to what you just said.
I'm sorry, Artis. Again, my fault.
She's lateral. So a number of things have been said that I wanted to say, but I want to go back to our early conversations when we started discussing strategic planning. And one of the questions you posed to us was, like, what's our role? And one of the things I put on the table is, I think we're a prophet. We're a prophet. And we're a prophet because we have lots of information about what we think is going to happen in this region. And so I think that positions us
to speak to the future. And so these comments that have been made around how important it is we hold up the issue of consequences and what really happens, I mean, I happen to think it should be very aggressive because you want to get attention. I mean, you don't want to be an alarmist, but if the sky is going to fall in 40 years, we should really make sure people now know we're saying it's going to fall in 40 years. I know it's a balance because you don't want to frighten people, but I think we need to be a lot more aggressive. And the document we got with the header, what are the risks or challenges to Metro Future, I think all of those things should be highlighted in the video because I had the same reaction you had, Mary, when I saw attention. And that's been an issue for me, and I'm on the record about it. I think we need to get at it. But it does come off like that's the one impediment for our future. And given that in the presentation, Barbara, I think you made reference to how we're going to use employees to this message, you know, I still have a continuing question about how we've used this process to engage our employees and help transform the agency. I had an experience some years ago at Xerox headquarters meeting with their CEO about quality and how you implement it through the whole organization. And, you know, he brought every person in Xerox knew all of the principles. And I was like, yeah, right. Well, I was actually leaving the building, and there was a woman who was a housekeeper. And I asked her, what were the imperatives for Xerox? And she wrote just like the CEO. That's when I realized it is possible. And God knows I've tried to do it in places where I've worked, not always successfully. But I just know that when you focus on that and you have your employees, everyone understanding things that are discussed at the executive level and in this board meeting, then we really will have all of those employees take the message to every employee they interact with. And I think we have a better chance of influencing policy and decisions and funders, you know, into the future. So those are the two comments.
I want to clarify one thing. You weren't selling profits for FIT, were you?
I'm with the profit. I think that is our role. There is no question. There's several layers of audience here. And I absolutely agree with Kathy that in each of our jurisdictions, there is a really well-educated set of citizens who are potentially can give you really sophisticated answers. Part of this campaign seems to be wanting to be sure to touch other or just the ordinary people who don't think about this, and I think we have to do that too. I also think that there's that among elected officials and the CEOs and the COOs, there's an increasing urgency about what are we going to do and how can we connect in a way that lets us begin to move it forward. And I can only imagine that back in the 60s there was a similar kind of sense of urgency that began to develop in the people who viewed themselves as leaders. And so when you come to Arlington, when you go to MBTC, you should presume that there's uneasiness in the room about the future and that they really are looking for somebody to help frame it up and figure out where to go. And that's, we can do that. I think we've spent so much time thinking about this over the last 14 months that we can do that. The big gets are big. They as Tom says, years of planning and years of building agreement. But we're also in a situation where we're beginning to not work really well as a region. And so we need to partly separate the big get, the new tunnel, the underground pedestrian stuff, which will take years, you know, I hope I'm here to invade, from the stuff that probably in the next 5 years we can't wait on. The dedicated bus lanes, the some stuff that is less about building things and more about regional agreements to dedicate what already exists to solving this problem. And so that doesn't come through here yet. I know that our planning people think that way. I know that some of our staff people talk that way. But as we go out, it's like 5 years and then 40, right? And if we can engage people on how to come together around the five-year easier stuff, The 40-year stuff will also get easier because we'll be building those new ongoing relationships around solving the problem. And we will also get the low-hanging fruit and some success, which will start to fuel the belief that the rest of it is available to us. So I think we have to realize the message has to be somewhat tailored to the audience.
Mark, did you have something? Alvin?
Just a couple of additional points. I've spoken a little bit, but again, I agree with everything that has been said with respect to sharpening the focus. I think that people actually expect us to have that command of data around costs, and we can give it by example. X cost, X took X time to build, and if we're going to do that, this is going to take that. I think that the other piece is that the sky's not falling, but we clearly are in an urgent situation, and we don't need, and we need to make sure that that is not masked. Richard makes it very clear in every commentary that he makes with respect to the requirements to build the system as it is right now and the future, but we need to sharpen our discussion around what it will take to maintain and to grow, and again to sharpen the consequences of not doing that. And the last piece I think that at least didn't come through to me that I think is an important piece to draw in to sharp focus, and that is the environmental consequences. We don't mention air quality. We don't talk about the consequences of putting more carbon roads. We don't talk about the air quality standards within this marketplace. We don't talk about the impact of transit and the roads on the Chesapeake Bay and the framework, the enforcement framework that is aggressive in this marketplace right now. And what we do has a direct impact on the ability to build, to develop, on people driving cars or not. There are a lot of environmental consequences related to transit that we want to address here, which can be real barriers to economic development and growth, where we get stopped in our tracks if we don't address some of those issues. And transit is an important to build into that.
And I think as we embark on this process, it's somewhat of a mistake to jump quickly to this is the solution, these are the 10 projects, this is what they are costing. I think we do have to build a momentum around the region is going to change, the region is going to grow, we are going to invest. Let's work together to figure out the best way to do that. When it comes to, you know, the referendum or whatever, closing the sale, we really have to get people focused on the product first. You know, my best example of that is Utah, where Governor Huntsman had a conversation with all of the people in Utah and got them ready to accept the idea that they had to plan to grow, they had to invest, they had to build transit, they had to do a lot of things. And then closing the sale was the easier part. But I think it's all in terms of what are the consequences if we don't do it, what are the costs that we're going to have to bear anyway if the people of Philadelphia or Houston or Calcutta move here. Whatever, it's going to be a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I don't think on day one you say, here's exactly what we're going to charge you for what we think is the right solution. They've got to get to the right solution in their minds, and then we say, how do you make it work? What things do you have to do? You have to keep rebuilding the system. You have to have core capacity if you're going to have extensions. Build that case, but build it after we've tilled the ground to say, this is what we've got to do.
Plus, I'd like to add, we talk a lot about consequences. This is also about choices, and that to the extent that we have a list of major capital improvements, such as building new tunnels, et cetera, that are costly. But if you also look at the list of things like building more parking decks and building more roadways and all this other stuff, it's basically a cost. And basically what you have to do is frame it as choices for the region. If you're going to get this growth, how do you want to deploy resources in a most effective way? Because you're also appealing to the non-riders.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big piece that's missing here. We're talking inside baseball a lot to our customers and, you know, to the people who care about transit. But I also think the message, I think Alvin also stated it very eloquently, is really kind of what are the benefits and of having a transit system so those non-riders also benefit in ways that you know, that may not as customers. And I think that piece of it really needs to be framed in this plan, because if you want to talk to a broader audience, that's a big chunk of it, and they're also constituents. And I think it's framing a message that way where I think you can be pretty effective and also lay these things out as choices as well as consequences for the region.
Yes, sir.
As I listen to the conversation and look at the strategies to address it, when we look at the district, we will not have the ability to add any additional capacity to our roadway. We will not have the ability to build all of these tunnels, because under our roadways right now, we're going to be trying to deal with stormwater. So the environmental question comes up, is brought into play. So I hate to be an advocate of other forms of transportation, but I think that we need to push for us to stay in the marketplace, to be one of the top 5 cities in the world. We need to have transportation options and continue to have transportation options in order for us to continue to be one of the best cities in the world. The other piece of it is that as we try to communicate to the public with social media in and out, I think that Ms. Bowser indicated is that we've got to put it out there in all the our public channels, put it on all of our social networks. We really need to push it out there and have it as part of information that we provide, instead of the citizens that bring information that's not consistent with what we already have. I hear a lot of data from citizen groups that tell a lot about WMATA, but the data not accurate. And so putting that accurate data out there so they can pull from the information that we're saying, I think is very important.
Other thoughts?
No, I didn't, but I will comment. I don't know where we are. We've had a lot of great discussion, and I really think the presentation has been good. And the only questions I would leave with is that we may need to put some underlying pieces under this. I think we've stepped out with a really good product, and I think we can. I think the piece that is missing most is that we can show people as we go to our partners what we've accomplished. And we have something good to talk about. We have our own capital program that's moving forward, moving to that. How do we get here, and how are we going to move in the future is how this is going to play out.
I think I heard three big themes from all of you. One was consequences. We need to talk about, we don't do something, what is going to happen. And we have that, you're right. We have that in the storyboard that I provided. We need to talk about what we have gotten done, what has happened over the last 2 years, what does that mean? And I think, Alvin, you were really good about, and also Mort, like giving examples of what things cost. Maybe not coming forward with this whole package is going to cost that. But if you're talking about 8-car trains on the entire system, that's roughly $1.5 billion, or at least give people an idea of what the ranges of some of these options are. And I think we can do that. So those are what I heard.
Could I just add two things to that? I would add, to cost, I would add time. How long it takes to even to design, order, and receive cars takes a long time. That would be one. And the other thing is, we talk about cost, let's also talk about benefit. When we say that we will, if we add 75 cars to it to create 8-car trains, then we are able to move X number more people in X period of time. Let's show the bit of the cost and also show it as it relates to any of these investments. What is the return on that investment? How quickly people get to work? How many stops they don't have to make? How much development is created by X new miles in terms of zoned land? I mean, we've got that data. We can demonstrate what the investment will result in, which translates into quality of life and economic benefit for the region. So we've got to talk both at the same time for what is proposed or suggested or possible.
Picking up on Mort's comment earlier, what happened in Salt Lake and what happened in Seattle that was really surprising is when they lay out the I'm talking about larger costs now,
the total infrastructure cost of receiving 4 million people if you go this direction versus this direction. And the public, when shown these kinds of implications, went the direction that we would all want it to go, but nobody ever would have gotten there in the beginning if this alternative had not been presented to us. It's really at a fairly high level of how we're going to absorb these 4 million people and have a livable, environmentally clean, accessible type of situation.
We're going to spend the money. We're going to spend the money. We're going to spend it on transit, or we're going to spend it on roads and all the other stuff. And so it is about making a regional choice about which future you want. And so the $1.5 billion for the A-car trains that then moves, how many, you know, or 100,000 more people, is the same $1.5 billion that maybe gets you half of the Springfield interchange and cars sitting in traffic with one person in a car. I mean, it's those kinds of things that then people go, oh, I'm going to spend the money, or are we going to sell your roads off in order to not spend the money? I mean, those are the choices.
So does staff have enough feedback from the board on this one? This is terrific.
Neil.
But what? All right. I'm also not sure. Terry's point was picked up on, because I recognize, I think, that after the presentation, that a lot of the to increase capacity, it has to start at core. Is that accurate? And even if you put a price tag on a tunnel, well, where's that tunnel going to go? And so are we putting things on the table that are feasible and study them to the point where we know that they're feasible? And then there are obviously other costs associated with constructing a tunnel in a dense downtown. My question is, how do we put this on the table? Have we developed some level of comfort that this is actually a feasible option?
Yeah, let me answer that. We're trying to bridge between the strategy, and when we're talking to people, what does it mean to increase core capacity? Give some examples. We're not at the point of saying, do this, or do this specifically. But I think when we have discussion and get people to understand that the core capacity has to be increased to the points made before, and what does it mean when you talk about that, then that helps us move forward on doing the type of planning which produces the cost, produces all the more detailed benefits. It's not starting out today saying we must build this tunnel or we must do this line. It's to say these are the types of things that can be done. But it is massive. It is massive. It's in the beginning of the conversation. It's not the end point. I would expect that it'll take quite some time to get that. Okay, we wanted to improve the core capacity. This is what we think is the most optimal way to do it. That'll take some time.
Michael.
A couple of quick thoughts. One on picking up on Alvin's point about the environment. One of the downsides of not doing what we're talking about is detrimental health impacts. And I bet to some degree there are experts who could quantify how many more children will have asthma, how many more people will die from lung cancer. You know, if we don't do this, and we're adding millions more people to our region. And going to that point, there was a report in the paper this week of some group in Virginia that did an analysis of those projections in Virginia between now and 2040, and there was going to be 1.7 million new people in Virginia. It wasn't just in our compact, it went out farther, but it would still dramatically affect us, obviously. And that's not 30 years, that's 28 years. When we first met 4 months ago, you said 2 million people, the city of Houston, we got a problem, are going to be coming here. Well, it looks like it's going to be a lot more than 2 million and more quickly than 30 years. So this really is urgent, And what's starting here is so crucially important to our region. Probably nothing's going on in our region that's more important than what's starting here. And we need to move it quickly and get the conversation going around every constituent in the region of how we're going to do this. And one question I've asked our general manager a few weeks ago, and maybe we can come up with a number, is if we put a penny on the gas tax in the region and in each jurisdiction, if we put a penny on it, how much money does that generate? I have no idea. But how many pennies does it take to begin to get the billions of dollars that we're going to need? Because that is, in my view, the logical way to pay for what we got to do. I may be in a minority on that, but my view is that that's a very logical way to come up with the money that we're going to need. And if we could find out how much each penny on the gas tax, if it's the whole region contributing to this fund, that would go to this cause, maybe we could begin to put some real numbers out there that would make some sense for people to think about and start talking about.
All three jurisdictions have appointed not one, but two blue ribbon groups to make recommendations about stable and reliable funding for WMATA. They went to an awful lot of trouble to document the revenue from a gas tax, a sales tax, an earnings tax, and those revenue estimates are still probably valid, and they are valid probably because all three jurisdictions participated in the development of the revenue and the ask. So it's there. It's even there in a process that the three jurisdictions actually reviewed.
Yeah, I just would offer as an observation, the conversation we just had the last hour, back 14 months ago, we were talking about providing a forum for the region to discuss where they ought to be in the future, and you were taking the leadership role in getting that out there. That's quite a change for Metro. I mean, you know, sometimes you don't even appreciate what you're doing here, but it's really quite something to see the role that you're playing going forward. You're leading the discussion on this and presenting it out there, which is really, I think, in line with the way you brought up your strategic role. So congratulations. Mr. Chairman, I have a question of procedure here. It's 10 minutes to 3. We had some other items we wanted to get at, which were some of the strategic challenges that are above and outside the staff's ability to control, that they want to suggest that might be on your work plan, the board's work plan for the coming months. Do you want to take a discussion of that now, or do you want to go for a later meeting? How do you want to proceed?
Well, we are scheduled to go till 4 o'clock this afternoon, and not everybody can stay that long, but that was the schedule. Rather than defer, my instinct would be to maybe take a break and come back and keep going, unless there's strong objection to that. I know there are one or two members of the committee that have to leave, but if we could keep moving, I think we ought to. Why don't we take a 5-minute recess and reconvene and get into those issues?
All right. So just refresh our memory. This is our pyramid that we talked about. The vision leading to the strategic plan with the four strategic goals and the performance measures associated with that, leading to the business plan that Rich and his staff are going to come back to you with, which will be multi-year with actual budgets associated with it. We can go to the next slide. But while the staff, executive leadership team, was doing their internal review of all the work that you've done over the last year and coming to grips with themselves, they basically made the point, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but they basically made the point that there's some things that you want for the agency, but we as staff cannot produce on, and we don't feel comfortable in that position. So we'd like you as a board, essentially, I'm putting the word out there, but we'd like you as the board to help us on things that are outside of our direct control at this point in time. So talk about what's our core business. Certain service delivery issues, such as a paratransit. What kind of a planning role are we going to play? The conversation we just kind of had here. What are we going to do with workforce development going forward, and particularly the cost associated with that as a percentage of our budget? And then how do we get sustainable, predictable, long-term funding? The criteria the staff used in coming up with these were that board action would be required, it's a potential change in Metro roles, and it may require additional resources, and it may require interjurisdictional action. So using that as sort of a piece of staff work, that leads us into the discussion, when I say us, the board, into a discussion of what are the kind of issues that we want to perhaps tackle over the next 6 to 12 months in our role, that is sort of something the staff can't do, trying to help sort through some of these issues. So I'm asking here at this point in time comments on our agenda for the next half hour or so. What I think we're trying to do, and I'm asking for feedback on this, I think what we're trying to do is identify those strategic issues that you as a board want to continue to work on in the months ahead. Is that, do people have other ideas, or is that okay? People comfortable with that? Not that it can't change, but at least a beginning a work plan? Okay, so one is the what is Metro's core business? And that, if you recall, last summer, there was quite a bit of discussion about that. You know, is our job, for example, delivering bus service, just taking as an example, for the region? Or is it our job to deliver regional bus service for the region? Or is it our job to make sure that from the customer point of view, that there's easily understood information, easily transferable fair media, and quality of service, regardless of who's providing? Those are just three examples on that one thing of what our core mission is going forward. So why don't we get some discussion on this one? The kind of issues that come to your mind on what kind of a discussion do we need to have that's above and beyond where we're providing Metro Rail and Metro Bus about what our core business is? Mary?
You know, one thing that comes to mind for me is a conversation we have tiptoed into a couple of times. Just we have stations where we know we need more access. We need another elevator. We need another entrance. Right now, we have a policy that says if that's the case and it's in your jurisdiction, you need to figure that out. So for me, there's a series of questions about as we continue to grow, as we continue to add more people, what is so essential to the working of the system that we should all help pay for it, versus what's an enhancement community that really is only to the community's benefit, and how do we think about paying for it? So, I mean, I can talk about those other things too, but to me that's sort of the next layer where we have existing policy that may not be helping us have the right conversation about our core business.
Mark. I think whether it's the core business question or any of the other ones up here, none of them are things that we can decide totally for ourselves. I think we really just have to recognize they are important issues and then begin to engage with others about where we should go. With thoughts of what we might think is right, but I don't think we are the final arbiter of some of these issues.
But I think what is different about these, though, is that basically what the staff is for more board leadership on these questions than staff leadership. Yeah, Tom.
Issues that have economic and political and jurisdiction and operation consequences. For instance, the issue about whether or not Metro can be in the non-regional bus operating. Core business, what is that core business? What are the costs of not having the non-regional in terms of economics of scale, operational efficiencies, the coordination issues? It takes a set of sophisticated analysis to support a board involvement in choices like some of these. I'm, for one, wouldn't be ready to even have a jurisdiction discussion around those without more data, more real research about the cost and the trades involved. I don't know what the real economics and the real efficiencies of all the models of delivering paratransit service are nationally. The board can't just kind of wander into an abstract set of these. I think they're all serious questions, but serious questions take serious effort to develop the pros and cons, the trades, suggested paths for the board to be able to be serious in pursuit of any of those.
I think the question here is, if that analysis were there, and I agree it needs to be there, will the board be then ready to engage with others about it based on that analysis? You know, I think we should be. Long-term funding, when you reminded me of that painful experience you and Jim Dyke and I went through for 6 months to produce a blue ribbon report, laid out all kinds of options, but nobody then wanted to, other than the federal government, which did come through with this, nobody else touched it.
Yeah, I have a similar reaction. It's hard to talk about these issues in the abstract. In fact, it's impossible to talk about them in the abstract. There are a lot of touch points associated with all of them. What I would say, though, is that certainly there are important issues, crucial issues. But in my mind, as I think about them right now, they're more likely to grow out of discussions that emerge from the conversations precipitated by the conversation we had for the first 2 hours. In those kinds of discussions and sharpening the focus on the cost-benefit, the consequences, the strategies for getting to a system that supports the vitality of the region will highlight these kinds of issues. Now, these issues are not all the same kind of an issue. Some belong in different forums. Some of them are more operational issues. Some are more political and strategic issues. So I think they are crucial discussions, but I think they've got to grow out of the other dialogue we have, and I agree with the staff work. But obviously, the staff can't just go out and start generating reports. You know, you'll need some strategic guidance, but I think that'll come out of some of the dialogue we have as we shape the strategic plan and we set priorities for what can and can't be done within what time frame.
So taking as an example, let's take the second one about the efficiency and effectiveness of delivering paratransit service. What staff is basically saying to you is this is a current and potentially huge future problem that has all kinds of implications. We need your involvement in this. And what I hear Tom saying is, in order for us to handle that properly, even before we have a discussion with the various stakeholders, we've got to get briefed with staff help on what the facts are. So there's got to be an education process within the board on this issue to determine what the issue is, what are the options, et cetera, before that kind of discussion could occur outside. I mean, is that capture what you were saying there?
For instance, and at one point, there is such a wide variance about utilization of paratransit service in this region by jurisdiction.
Yes.
Fairfax County and Virginia, in relative terms, have minimal utilization of paratransit service. On the other hand, the district and Prince George's County account for 60% almost of the paratransit use. There are different drivers. I don't understand how that variance tends to be that severe. But that's part of trying to struggle with
the delivery of paratransit services is understanding those kinds of disparate service usage. I know there are other models out there about how you deliver it. It doesn't get to the other set of issues around what services are provided when, where, and how, and why within the region. And you need to know that.
Yeah, I just want to add maybe a clarifying comment. Points you just made, Hoffman just made. What the staff is not looking for is an answer to these questions today or tomorrow or even 3 months from now. But as you point out, it requires a lot of work to really address these issues. And we think they're all big issues, and you may have other issues to address. What we're looking for, not necessarily today, but you know, for a month or two, and maybe it's after we've had, been out in the region with discussions, is where does the board want to concentrate? What are two issues that you'd like to really concentrate on for the next year that we can then support? I don't think we have the capacity to really get everything else that's going on to get into the deep type of analysis on all these questions in the same time period. That was, you know, where do you really, what one or two that you really want to tackle first? And again, it doesn't have to be answered today, but it's just to think about. And how are we going to tackle it, right?
The thing that I appreciate that. Thank you. That I hope will happen through this next phase of dialogue and in creating buy-in to a strategic plan, a strategic framework, is, number one, we let the community in on, our stakeholders, on these kinds of issues that we must address that are crucial to efficiently and effectively operating the system now and into the future. To bring those folks into the decisioning, not to be at the table to make the decision, but to understand we've got to invest in examining those issues and that the outcome will result in costs. And it's easy for folks to, and some people will do this, but a lot don't, to stand on a podium or any place else and be critical. But if we don't provide information, factual information, to help them focus their criticism, I think then it's our problem. And so we can amplify the dialogue, because at the end of the day, they're going to hold us accountable, us meaning WMATA, us being the system, for not delivering effectively and efficiently on these issues. And we are our own worst enemy if we don't sharpen the dialogue around them so that we can create a forum for some decisions and actions and, as Marcel said, making choices. So that's kind of way on it.
But there is one thing up there that is unavoidable as a board responsibility that is coming faster than any of us probably like, and that is, what is an affordable labor model for Metro? No matter how this comes out, this contract will cost us something, and we don't have a story for it. We don't have a strategy for dealing with it other than the strategy that we had for the last three or four labor negotiations. I was prioritizing something that we own as an outcome, and it's coming soon. It's the labor model. And yes. And I, for one, feel like I need more data about the differential between, for instance, the growth in healthcare costs and retiree healthcare costs and pension costs as part of that model. And what are the strategy choices or options that we have about dealing with those?
No matter which one you pick, I mean, what you just said is a given. In other words, there's going to have to be staff work provided to you to get you the information you need to help populate the discussion.
Yeah, but this one is coming. This one is in.
So picking up on Richard's.
The train has left the station here about this issue for this round of labor contracting. And
you're arguing that this should be one of the first priorities of the board.
Well, it's going to be the first set of decisions that we have to deal with, and it's going to have
an imperative behind it about motion and timeliness that force us to make decisions. And if we don't have a context for making them, and it's the best deal we could get, or the arbiter went against us,
yep.
We can't keep doing what we've been doing about that set of outcomes.
The powerful argument. Kathy.
When I look at the prioritization aspect, what is it that the staff has been accomplishing in a short period of months and are going into another year of our future, and which are the most important ones? And you may take the labor model if you want, but I think it is in your prioritizing. You may not think that transit delivery is one that we want to get into, but actually, if you're talking about building a future, a metro future, accessibility, aging is a major, major transportation issue for us. And in the transportation, has to take an account how we're going to deliver that service. And is that the delivery service that is reasonably palatable for us to partner on? I think what makes it that jurisdictions are pulling themselves out of it. I don't, you know, say we are the largest of non-participants, but will we be the largest of non-participants in the future? We don't have an answer to that. So I think it's a prioritization of this list. And that helps, I think, the staff and the board focus on follow up the other initiatives.
What I hear in the table so far is that labor and accessibility ought to be the first two, at least to get discussion going.
Well,
Alvin,
they're integral, and I agree with Kathy in terms of them being a priority. I think. But I would add that we're in a credibility building place. We are still trying to acquire that thing. We don't have that yet. We are working toward that. And I think that we, part of the demonstration is responsibly handling the matters of today as we are, and it's we're not where we want to be. We know we've got a long ways to go, and we're continuing to build the blocks there. And that is one level of establishing credibility, demonstrating to our community that we understand the things that are broken that need to get fixed, and that we are fixing them, and that we can explain why the ones that aren't fixed and a plan for getting there. So that's part one. And I think that establishes one level of credibility as we do it and perform day in and day out. I think the other issue, though, is that we need to be able to explain these issues when we talk with our constituencies. We need to have an understanding of these issues and understand how they impact today and tomorrow, and to be able to discuss them with our constituency as to why we've got to address how we are going to address them. And I think that it is urgent that we put them in a framework. Here's how this impacts our business operation, both today and tomorrow. Here's why it's important, why we need to address it. Here's a reason why we need to address it in this time frame, and this is a method for addressing it. I think we've got to do that to bring those kinds of issues forward. Now, they'll emerge from the dialogue we're going to have with our constituencies, but we've got to demonstrate our capacity to understand these issues and to put them into actionable plans that will fix the situation. Now, a lot of them are politically have political elements to them that we need to engage our stakeholders and a lot of folks in, but we do have to frame the discussion. That's what we've got to be, not just put it, we've got to frame it in a way that it can be discussed.
What I see you doing here is essentially saying, because of transparency, that you're trying to come to a conclusion. These are issues that we need to deal with over the next year, two, three. But we're going to focus on these two first, or that type of thing. I mean, you're telling the public what you're going to delve into in more detail, and you're establishing
I mean, there's another issue here. Organizationally, within the board, how do you, let's say you did, for example, decide to focus on the labor model. Is that in this committee, or is that committee you set up a special committee? I mean, that's a sort of a separate issue.
Yeah, but I don't have a basis for deciding which one of these is 1, 2, 3, 4, or 6 at this particular discussion right now. For me, I agree that labor is a crucial issue for us, immediate, a crucial issue. And I agree that paratransit costs are immediate crucial issues. I don't have data in front of me that discusses about Metro's core business, and maybe the other two are more important because I don't have the data to support the other discussions, but at least we need a framework for saying why X is more important than Y. And frankly, if there were 4 or 5 other issues that are not on this list, why they wouldn't be there.
Yeah. Well, that's fair. And the reality is that these aren't separate issues. I mean, the way I'm dealing with labor costs is dealing with the example I gave you about bus service. I mean, if you shed bus service, you're dealing with labor costs. So they are interrelated. But really what we're trying to do here is you're trying to figure out how do I want to focus my attention from a policy standpoint going forward here. You're just trying to think through a little bit. And I think, Alvin, what you're raising is in order to do that properly, I've got to have better data. I've got to make sure I understand how I want to present that to the public and what have you, and which are all accurate. But I still think it's a valuable question to sit here and decide, well, I think we ought to begin to put some more energy into these two. I mean, the staff basically is saying to you, hey, we could use your help on these. And they're asking you, okay, which ones are you game that's going to work with us on?
I'd ask which ones the staff would recommend that we work on first.
No takers there.
Well, I mean, it's not an unfair question, and it's not intended specifically to be rhetorical, but I do believe that it's just that it's important for us to begin to discuss. Okay, for example, what is Metro's What's the role of the map of the future? I think I know what that question means, but tell me what that means. Because if what is the third bullet? What does that mean?
Well, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think what we're trying to say is that as you try to connect communities and develop this vision board we've been discussing for the last hour.
Mm-hmm.
What role does Metro play in that? And then, for example, give you an example, the one that Mary just brought up. I mean, accessibility to station. I mean, our position heretofore, correct me if I'm wrong, is that that's a local jurisdictional issue. Metro, you know, just tell us what you're willing to pay for without a station. Well, maybe going forward, we want to be much more aggressive on that point. Or another example is joint development. Maybe we want to get involved with Prince George's County in a huge on all kinds of development activities around the stations we have there right now for the benefit of the region, way above and beyond anything we've done in the past.
Well, see, for me, those are different kinds of questions than an issue of a labor market question. I mean, they're not necessarily comparative questions.
No, that's a different question.
And so in terms of making, if we're looking at these in terms of making choices, I don't know that I'm choosing between how we engage in development activities versus addressing a former labor market. I think that joint development and how we engage on that is a now question because we have joint development going on all the time. That's not a question. Now, does the staff need board policy guidance? Absolutely. That is something that we need to make sure that we effectively parade around that. But that's not a look down the road item. We do joint development now, and if we need a joint development process that is more effective, we need to address that now. Labor we need to address now. If we're talking about how we work and model paratransit, that may take a little longer as a strategic issue. And so I'm not trying to play the issues off against each other, but they're not all the same question.
That's right. I mean, all of these issues are important. They wouldn't be up here if they weren't. So it's really thinking through from the board standpoint, you know, how do you want to spend your time? What do you want to focus on? I mean, we know you, all the other stuff you have going, so it's there.
You know, the one I was just focusing on is one actually that I'm interested in knowing from other and business people
what they think about how they see Metro in the future, if you kind of start drawing the picture and the lines get longer and all of that. And but it is, I was thinking about this as, you know, we're having one set of questions, conversations right now with these about, you know, here's what we think the strategic direction is, here are the things we're going to be working on. And we talked a lot about the fact that we don't that what we need is predictable long-term funding, and we're building credibility. But the long-term vision gets you at the question that somebody raised before, like, you know, if I do a penny on the gas, what does that mean? And for how long is that sufficient, right? I think that's the other question. So for me, those two, and maybe the core business one, are questions that I would like to kind of figure out how to frame up for the regional kinds of conversations that I think, because we have a strategic plan and we're working on it, doesn't mean we don't have to keep talking to them. So those questions are going to persist as we continue to do our work forward. The one about efficient and effective paratransit and labor costs feed into what the kinds of things that we're going to get asked about. So what are you doing to deal with labor costs? And if you can't get anywhere but we're stuck whatever the arbiter decides, then that does drive how other people in the region feel about who should deliver paratransit potentially, or you know, some other kinds of services that we have, because that labor cost is significant and real. And so to me, they kind of fall into those two categories. But I think we should be thinking a year from now, if we get them to accept the strategic plan and we're working on the strategic plan, then what's the next question that we like to engage with the business community on? And is it, you know, okay, so how should we think about the future together? Is it more, you know, local buses feeding into our system? Is it local transit services? Is it an expanded role for Metro that we haven't thought of yet? But anyway, that's kind of how I'm thinking about it. And it's taken us 14 months to frame this up. These are not simple things. They require a lot of thinking to get to the right framing. And so maybe that's a way to think about it. I do agree the labor thing is coming, and we can't turn a blind eye to it. And I guess, you know, on paratransit, I feel like we've really made a tremendous amount of progress in the last couple of years, you know, through the good work of a huge number of people on staff and the community. And that one I kind of almost feel like, well, you know, why don't we ask the JCC and our various disability communities to kind of go through and report back to us or something. But, you know, it doesn't have to be only Metro staff.
So what I'm hearing, putting words in your mouth a little bit, so correct me if I'm wrong, but what I'm hearing is on the labor, that goes to the credibility today, because that's one of the first questions you're going to get out there. Mm-hmm. Secondly, then, second priority would be perhaps the paratransit, because it's affecting your ability to provide service of the tremendous increase in cost that is for each year. Therefore, me and certain other can't have it.
But we're in a decreasing cost.
No, it's increasing.
It's decreasing. Right.
Yeah. More into that population, it likely in the future will start going up again.
Yeah.
And it's got, as Kathy indicated, there's got to be a strategy there that's, again, a credible, believable issue going forward. And then you're saying, if I'm hearing you right, Mary, that the core business one, the defensive community one, and the long-term funding are sort of works in progress. I mean, we're sort of doing that as we're having these discussions.
With those other people, you know, that are actually the people who are going to
they have to be comfortable with what our role is in order to be comfortable with the funding that we're going to ask for. Those two things have to join up in some manner, in my mind.
So, I mean, if that all makes sense, what I'm hearing is the first priority would be the labor, the second priority would be accessibility, and then sort of hiring the other three as you're going through the process. Is that what I'm hearing from the group? I mean, where another way of doing this is to throw out another option. I mean, you've got a relatively large board. You could have Buddy sort of being the bird dog on each one of these. And keep an eye on it as you're going through, and you don't have to drop one. These are all important. It either needs some vigilance by somebody on the board, or you could set up a committee structure that gives Kathy.
I was
just
asked
a
different question
from
the school would it be helpful to give some core information?
Oh, thank you. Core information to help everybody understand why are we here with this one? For example, as Tom said, you know, what's done, what's behind it, and I think I understand that we have this because the staff need to have some focus on what they should take as a priority of a work product going forward, and then just everything else they have to do, and that if we say it's a priority, do we need to have some preamble of what is the problem and how do we move forward. The research aspect of it, but just that. And then be able to take this and say, okay, from a magnitude of name it cost or service quality or whatever, does it make sense to think this one is one and the other one as something else? I think Mary's point about, and I think what all of us are saying, at least what I was saying about paratransit, I kind of feel that it has to be part of the larger discussion as we're talking about the strategic goals pieces, because that's a growth aspect, it's a cost aspect, it's a part there, but I think we probably should bite the bullet, as you've kind of described, that we some lie in a greater level of importance right now.
Well, in answer to your question, we can, when I say we, staff can step back. Staff has done background work on all of these.
Mm-hmm.
And so we could set up the next meeting to give you a briefing on each one of the five, just in terms of basic data without doing more work. But they've done, I've seen what they've done. They've done enough work, in my opinion, to give you good data to sort of inform the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be one you could say, hey, before I make a decision on what I want to focus on, I want to get more information. And another session where you get that information and then make a decision on what you want to focus on.
Well, for me, that would be important. I'm not prepared to say that any of these are not a priority, but labor is a given. It is an omnipresent issue for us, a driver. And maybe I misunderstand the context of how it's there as a challenge, but it certainly is an operational and a fiscal challenge and a strategic challenge and with a lot of implications to it. So for me, yes, that is a priority. I just didn't realize I would be in a trade-off session, and it's my fault for maybe not really full standing on that, and that's not a criticism. I appreciate the work that's come forward, but I need a little more context for decisioning. The other piece is that some of them really are strategic questions, I think as Mary framed, that really have a lot of jurisdictional dialogue associated with them, and I guess I'm just not connecting the dots well right now in terms of what I'm being asked.
On the later thing, I mean, what I hear Rich and the staff saying is, look, we just need to move on the labor front. I mean, we know what your direction is on labor. You want us to do the best job possible to not only get employees and make them part of the solution, but also control our labor costs, deal with pension issues, et cetera. However, what's saying to you is, going forward, we need a sea change. We have to think something quite different. And we might, but it's way beyond our scope. We need to involve in that discussion. That's what I'm hearing them say.
I'm open for that, definitely open for that. And so for me, that amplification of the research that you've done, I mean, I know you all know you don't have anything out here that you haven't researched. So there's not a link out there that would be helpful to us, and I'm open to those kinds of issues and your recommendations and leadership on it when we talk about it. That's right.
And we could look at that list. Boy, there's a third rail there I don't want to touch. But I think, in fact, they're the things that have to be dealt with if we're going to achieve the strategic goals. Some further discussion that will lead to potentially some controversy, but all the human dialogue with the people who are our partners in dealing with this. I just want to be sure that we do it in a professional way, in a very fact-based way, in a way that makes that dialogue something that leads to conclusions.
Having a specific one or two additional items, probably, if you think about the stakeholder and jurisdiction work that each one of these things takes in term conversations, I don't want to confuse people with a cacophony of issues. I think it's really important to stay focused, to deliver what we say we're going to deliver, to be a leader in the thought process, as we have been for the last couple of years. Starting on five of these is a daunting task, even just the preliminary discussion. And in the context of delivering a budget in a year that is a fair year, a fair increase year, having the start of a multi-year budget process and digest whatever comes out of the labor process with a contract of some kind. We don't have I don't think we have the capacity to make multiple. So it is a matter, I think, of setting priorities and taking the one or two that we think are something we can be successful at managing with all of our partners and stakeholders.
That I'm going to complete alignment with you on, and with Richard, and with the team on.
Yeah, the other argument for that is that, you know, in a new process here, take one and try it out and see how the process works before you start going to the other ones. Because you'll learn something, how you interact with the staff on this, et cetera. Well, is it comfortable on starting with the labor one without throwing the other ones out by any means, but just in terms of a board work plan?
Can I suggest something?
Yeah.
And I'm usually the guy that wants to really drive for the, But I think, we introduced this topic today, and I think it's good if we supply a little more data that we have and whatnot, and that perhaps we come back at another session and talk about some more. This really requires discussion and not necessarily a decision today.
I think it would be important as we begin this overall outreach process to also be saying these are issues that will have to be dealt with if we're going to be successful, but we don't have an answer. And maybe get some of the reaction to some of these that are beyond our course out of that outreach process.
It's an enormous accomplishment just to have them isolated and ride them out. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, it's great for the staff to know. I mean, the process here is so healthy. That, I can tell you, the agencies dream that board members will get involved on a policy basis, and that's essentially what the session is. So they very much wanted me to say yes and get involved in this stuff. So what I'm hearing, let me try to write it and tell me if this is, I'm hearing, hey, we want to keep all five in front of us when we do our outreach, et cetera, and also in front of us is the issues that we need to deal with. But the next step would be to, at the next session, to do a background briefing on each of the five with the data that's already been together, with an eye toward, at the end of that meeting, making a decision on priorities. Which one or two are we going to focus on? Is that a...
I don't personally need to say.
Just in the background, making and see where it goes. Is the board comfortable with it? Great.
Yeah, I just do want to say that I'm not a member of the Governance Committee, but I would like to thank the Governance Committee and the staff for the preparation and the work on this. It has been a very good dialogue, and I appreciate the work of the committee and the staff on bringing this forward and sharpening the dialogue. So thank you very much.
Anything else?
Anything else to come before the committee this afternoon? Hearing none, the committee will stand adjourned.
Thank you. Good job.